hey, what's going on?
Rearranging the studio you. Very quickly.
Nick's cable for his microphone got stuck under this giant Sullivan Sluggers comic.
So big.
It's away across the room.
So what's going on, guys? This is episode 70 of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
Is it?
Oh, snap.
Why do I always have such trouble saying Big Planet Comics podcast? I'm like the Big Planet Comics podcast. My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And you can listen to this podcast however you're listening to it.
Well done, everybody.
Yeah, we're everywhere. You can do the iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. Jared, I haven't asked you in a while. How's Twitter going?
It's tweet-tastic.
Actually, I did ask you because we talked about how you tweeted all those tweets.
I haven't done it this week. I'll probably do it next week. Blow up the Twitterverse again.
It's what we like to do.
It's true.
So what's been going on with you guys? It's been a while, except, well, we did our best of the year podcast, so I guess that hasn't been that long.
There's no time for chit-chat.
Yeah, but it's definitely been a while since we did a regular old podcast. We've got 4 weeks worth of stuff to review.
Yeah.
Yeah, and 4 weeks of us doing cool things we can tell each other about.
Yeah, what have we been doing?
Today I saw a lot of car accidents because of the snow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was Snowmageddon.
It's like 1 inch of snow, except it's so cold that it froze, and my neighborhood is like nothing was plowed or anything, so it was just like, it felt like the end of the world when I was driving to work. I was like going through my neighborhood, and there's like cars crashed like left and right. There's like a car like halfway into a yard, like through a fence. I was like, what's going on?
Oil drums of trash on fire.
Yeah.
Is that what the book Snow Crash is about?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What about you, Jared? You seem like you had a story.
I did. I went to the Music and Gaming Festival, which was a video game themed festival with some chiptune and other video game themed music.
I also went to that.
Ah, it's totally story. Sorry.
It's okay. Did anything exciting happen there?
I saw Bit Brigade, maybe. Is that possible?
That's a thing. Yeah, yeah.
Perform while one of their friends, I guess, live played through a video game trying to beat it, and he beat Castlevania and Contra. Man, they played the soundtracks to it.
That seems like a long concert.
Yeah. He was doing it like on one life.
Speedrunner.
Yeah, nice. And like the crowd at the end was like all chanting and screaming for him more than the band. It was very surreal.
That's awesome.
But it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw a couple bands there. I like met some musician guys. I do another podcast where we play video game music, so it was exciting for me. And there was like a huge arcade, played a bunch of games.
I went to that too. It was cool.
Yeah.
Did anybody know your podcast from there?
No.
Did you hand out cards?
I did.
Flyers?
We got this guy, DJ Cutman, to like cut a promo for us.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice. And, I beat a bunch of people at Street Fighter, various Street Fighter games.
Oh, the games.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you just were like fighting in
the streets. I was not fighting in the streets. Yeah, it was fun, though.
Awesome.
It was good times.
Good times all around.
Cool. Well, what should we do? Do we have any news?
We do have news.
All right, well, let's do that then.
This is the hottest, most breaking news of all time. J.J. Abrams is set to direct Star Wars Episode 7.
I feel like that's big. Like,
just exploded in the last couple hours.
That's the first time I think I've heard anyone say Episode 7. That's kind of blowing my mind now.
It's blowing your mind.
That's awesome.
No idea what it's going to be. There are different rumors that other old cast members would show up again, and
probably some lightsabers,
yeah,
some spaceships.
All I want is some Boba Fett.
Is the dude that played R2-D2 still alive?
Kenny Baker?
No,
I don't know.
I think so.
Sure. Then get him back. And
I think Anthony Daniels is still alive. I know Peter Mayhew's still alive.
Nice.
Mark Hamill's still alive.
Yep.
I think they're
all still alive for the most part.
Is James Earl Jones still alive?
Yeah, I think so. Right?
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
All right.
Sure.
Good work, everybody. I'm not dying. Yeah, but I think that's cool. It's weird that the same guy is directing Star Trek and Star Wars.
I know.
It's like causing an explosion in the rivalry of those fan bases.
But Star Trek, the new Star Trek, was such a Star Wars movie anyway. So
it's true.
Yeah. What else? You got any other news?
Jared has some news about Rob Liefeld.
My friend Mike turned me on to this one. So Rob Liefeld apparently is not only... Is he actually writing a novel, or is this a book, or is this just his script?
This is a screenplay.
So he's written a screenplay for
Rob Liefeld has written a screenplay. Breaking news.
About his life, basically, at Image and, like, the creation of Image.
And it's called Icons.
Of course he would write a screenplay about himself.
Of course. But, yeah, so there's, like, 11 pages up, sample pages up online, and they involve both the first time he met Todd McFarlane,
who he describes as looking like Christian Bale from The Fighter, and then he says exactly.
Yeah, the script, like the dialogue's pretty awesome, like awfully awesome, but like his little commentary on like the setting the scenes and stuff is the best part. Then there's a bit from when he gets together with everybody to, or McFarlane leads everyone to break from Marvel for the first time and like having the big confrontation in the executive offices. And then the best part is the third part where he's doing a signing and who shows up but his best fan, Eazy-E.
Eazy-E. He says, and who was standing there? My favorite rapper, Eazy-E.
It is his favorite rapper.
Favorite rapist.
And so that stuff is so funny. He was like, I looked in his trunk and it was the most gangster thing I had ever seen. Just like CDs and guns everywhere.
Yep.
It's so, my God, it's so bad. And like all the dialogue is hilarious. It's just like people being like, hello, I'm Todd McFarlane. Yeah. Oh, hello, I'm Rob Liefeld. And he's like, I know, because your name ends with L, just like Jim Lee and Eric Larson and it's Will Sportacio.
That's more clever than the dialogue actually is.
It's really funny. And then they go to a party and like freeze out Tom DeFalco and they're like, no, Tom, you don't get to come back here. And when he describes Eric Larson, he's like a fat guy with hair from his back coming out of his shirt. I'm like, wow, he must really hate Eric Larson.
Yeah.
But so there's that. So look for that in theaters near you.
Yeah, hopefully JJ Abrams gonna direct that too.
Yeah.
We should just make like a crappy like short film. That's like,
you mean,
we should shoot
you mean
that script.
A film that will be better than the real film?
We should shoot that script.
Oh, let's do that.
Let's do it. I've got a camera.
Oh, I have an idea.
You might get sued by Rob.
No. I've got an idea. Aren't we doing a live show sometime soon? We could have extras in.
We could reenact it at the live show.
That would be amazing.
A live reading of Rob Liefeld's script.
I think Nick should play Eazy-E.
A table reading? We have a table.
We do.
I know how to read.
It's true.
Someone could like read to me and I'll memorize my lines.
Because Jared does not know how to read. He's like pictures. Tori Amos. Tori can't read.
I need a prompter.
So is that all the news that we've got?
I think that's it. There was probably other stuff, but I didn't bother to look at it.
Yeah, that's okay. We've been busy. Well, we do have some viewer mail, though. You guys want to do that?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's do it. All right, let's see. What do we got here? Up first, we've got... Oh, boy. Where is this stuff?
All right, which mail we lost it.
We've got a question from Anwar Shewin, I'm going to say. I don't know if that's correct or not. But all right, it says, these are podcast questions.
Ready.
Number one, what are your favorite Adventure Time characters not named Finn and Jake, and why?
I'm going to go with Princess...
Jared does not watch Adventure Time. You can pass.
I'm going to go...
Ice King?
Yeah, Ice King, that's a guy.
I remember his name.
And why is because you remember his name.
He's got a crazy beard. Wait, isn't there one that's like something with cupcakes or something?
It's fine.
Cupcake
Girl? You can just say Ice King.
I'm going with Cupcake Girl.
Okay. Jared's our Ice King and Cupcake Girl. Nick, do you watch Adventure Time?
From time to time. I haven't seen like all of it.
Well, yeah, sure. There's a lot of it. Yeah.
Just too much adventure.
Well, who are your favorite characters?
I like Fiona.
Yeah, Fiona's good.
She's beautiful.
You
Is
like
she
cake?
The Cupcake Girl?
Well, she has a cat named Cake. Is that who you're talking about?
I don't remember. Yeah. I like cats, though.
There's also just a cupcake as well.
That's true.
All right. Well, good work, you guys.
How about you?
Kevin, save us.
I like Lumpy Space Princess, I also like BMO. I like both of them because they have very funny voices.
Everybody on that show has funny voices.
Yeah, but they have really funny voices. And BMO is like a video game system, and so he's awesome. Yeah. Or she. I don't know the gender of BMO.
Don't look at me.
Anyway, so hopefully that answers your question. Question number two, what were your weirdest customer interactions? So we've talked about this before that we don't kind of like to talk about that so much.
We can talk about the weirdest ones because I feel like those people will not listen to this or probably don't know how to use a computer, maybe.
Sure. We'll go for it.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got one. All right, go ahead.
The excitement going.
So there's a comic called Sonichu. And I don't know if we've ever talked about Sonichu on here before, but basically Sonichu is written by this guy named Christopher Chandler. And he shoots like these videos on the internet. He's insane. Don't watch the videos, whatever you do. And if you do, remember that I told you not to, and don't blame it on me. But he actually called me one day to see if we wanted to carry Sonichu in the store.
Wow.
And he asked what my name was, and I didn't tell him because I did not want him to know my name because he's a crazy person. And if he's listening, I guess now he does. Jared, do not tag him in Twitter when you post.
Oh, he's on Twitter?
Probably. I don't know. Yeah. But I was like, well, can you call back when everybody else is here? Because I want to talk it over with them. And I just wanted you guys to all be able to talk to Chris Chan, but he never called back.
What? I'm going to unfollow him now.
You can read all of his comics online, though. They're hilarious. It's called Sonichu. It's the best.
Done.
What about you, Nick?
I guess the weirdest, most surreal thing was when Daniel Johnston came in, I guess.
Yeah, we're changing this to what are our celebrity interactions at the store. There we go.
Well, it was really weird that just because, you know, he was walking in, I was like, oh, that guy looks a little off. And then I was like, hey, he looked really familiar. And then I was like, he's like walking around. And I was like, is that Daniel Johnston? And then he comes in and he's like, you have my comic. And I was like, what? And he's like, it's Space Ducks. I was like, oh.
Which is already one of Nick's favorite comics.
I was like,
ever.
This is crazy. Yeah. But he was, you know.
He said he was super nice. And
he was very nice. He's like, but definitely, he's definitely Daniel Johnston.
He's definitely Daniel
Johnston. You know who he is. He's like, you know, slightly off, but.
It would really be disappointing nice if he came in and he was just like, hi, my name's Daniel Johnston. How are you today?
It's true. He knew he was there with, I'm not sure who it was, but some of his family members. Oh. And they're all like super nice too. It was really weird.
Nice
people.
It was
just weird in the sense that like it was happening. I was like, what is
that
going
is
on here?
Pretty peculiar.
Yeah.
What about you, Jared? Are you going to pass again?
I can't think of anything.
All right.
Exciting.
These are podcast questions number 3. This is all from the same guy. Goku versus Superman. Who wins and why?
What?
I like he says and why because he's like, don't just say who wins.
No,
I want to know why.
Show your work.
I mean, for me, it depends on when you're talking about Goku.
My thing is not only when, but where. Are you under a yellow sun?
I think we're talking about full-powered Goku and full-powered Superman.
Is that what we're talking about?
Are we?
Yeah, well, because like after Goku just came out of a sun.
Right.
And, like, Goku asked after he's been, like, training in, like, the hyperbolic time chamber.
Yeah.
Super Saiyan up 8 times.
I feel like, how far does Goku go? Super Saiyan 3? SS3 Goku?
Yeah. I think, I
feel like Superman's always, like, SS8.
Really?
Just all the time. I don't know. Well, basically, so the way Dragon Ball Z works is whoever Goku's fighting, it's always really close, and then he wins. Sure. So Goku would win.
Yeah, probably.
And Superman has died.
It would be a really long fight, though.
It would be a really long fight.
Because it might be that Goku loses,
I think,
but
that's
is
what
saved and can come back and beat him another time.
Or
they team
or
up.
Goku can kill Superman, and then he's like, no, I want to fight him later. Because that's the thing that Goku does, because he's an idiot.
Yeah. That's true.
Also, I think that's what Battling Boy is about.
Right. I hope so.
Oh, breaking news. Paul Pope's got a new book coming out.
Woo-hoo.
And it's coming out in 2013. It's called Battling Boy.
It's been rumored to come out like a million times, but it's actually coming out.
Yeah,
now.
They put out preview pages and everything. So there's that. All right, and then we've got one more question from Anwar. He says, when did Scott Lobdell start to suck?
Oh.
Well, the first time you wrote a comic.
I'm going to say the moment he was born.
Moment he started to nurse.
Yeah, I don't know if he sucks as a human, but we do not like his comics.
They're definitely not good.
Wasn't there one that was okay that we were all surprised by?
There's at least one. There's like High Roads that was pretty good.
Oh, High Roads was good.
The new comic called High Roads? No, that's High Ways.
The other one with the midget Hitler imitator?
No, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You should read High Roads.
Maybe I won't.
And it was drawn by Lin Liu, I think?
Yep.
Oh, well, he's good.
It's action-adventure World War II style. It's pretty cool.
I might have to reread it. It might not be as good as I remember.
So after High Roads is the answer.
Yeah.
And before
High Roads.
That was a blip.
But I think that if we're going to actually like say...
Because how did he even get big? He was like the X-Men dude for a long time?
Yeah, that's when a lot of people started to not like Scott Lobdell was during the X-Men stuff. Yeah. Well, did he write the Jim Lee issues?
Probably. And he wrote all of Generation X.
Because it was Jim Lee, and then they're like,
yeah, that was certainly the 90s.
Jim Lee left, they're like, oh, this is terrible.
Look, Jared, if you read the script for Rob Liefeld's film Icons,
yes,
you'll find out that that kids don't read comics for the writing.
It's true.
They read comics for the art.
That's true.
So ditch the writer and get a bigger piece of the pie. That's what Toddy Mac says, the guy who played Batman. So yeah, thanks for all the questions, Anwar. This says at Anwar Starwind, so I think maybe he wanted us to say that
because
he put it on there.
It's the Twitter.
It's Anwar at AnwarStarwind.com, I believe is the way that works. All right, so we do have another question, though. This is from Sam Marks, who has sent us questions before.
Nice.
Yes.
He's a heavy metal bro, and he says...
I saw him today, or was it yesterday? We just saw him.
Which day was it, Nick?
I don't know.
That's what the question
story
is.
Story changes so quickly.
When did Nick see me? You going to pass? I'm going to say it was yesterday.
I'm going to say it was today. Because it's cold. You forgot.
Well, I get one veto.
No.
And I'm going to say...
It was today.
Cool.
Oh. It might not have been today, though.
All right, cool. Well, today. Thanks for the question, Sam. No, he says, if you had a comic about your life, about you and your life...
Oh.
I thought it said you and your wife, and I was like,
That's
what?
Creepy.
Who do you think would draw it, and who would you want to draw it? So who do you think would actually draw it, and who would you want to draw it? Note, it can embellish on your lives. He says he thinks Dan Clowes would draw his life appropriately. Huh. He'd be good with that. Though he'd like to see what Mike Mignola could pull together for him. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sam Marks.
I think Johnny Ryan would probably draw my life.
Like, you think that would be, like, the guy who would best represent your life in a comic
yeah,
form?
Yeah, because there's lots of fart jokes and...
That's true.
All sorts of inappropriateness. But, no, that's probably who would actually draw me.
Okay, well, so who do you
who
want?
Who would I want to draw me? Come back to me. Go to Jerry.
All right. Well, we'll do the first part first for everybody. Yeah.
So who do we want to draw?
No. Who would actually?
Who would? Probably Liefeld.
Just because he's cheap to get now.
I say he works for cheap, and yeah.
No, because Jared doesn't have any feet.
It's true. I do have feet that are hard to draw.
And he's like disproportionate.
I got a lot of pouches.
I feel like the person that would draw my life would maybe be like Evan Dorkin, because I'm like a jerk and I swear a lot.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then we're going to come back around to Nick. Who would you want to draw your life?
Who would I want to draw my life? I would want Jason to draw my life.
Oh, wow.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. But tell people why.
Because
you don't like to talk.
Because Jason's really good at just character stuff. Like, even with like one panel, he can show like a million emotions, and I don't know, it'd be great.
Nick is an emotional
fan. And I want to see what kind of animal I would be. It'd be interesting.
That's very funny, because who I was going to say I wanted to draw for me would be Lewis Trondheim. So I would be interested to see myself as an animal as well.
I thought you were going to say Milo Manara.
Wait.
Just because then...
Depends on the story.
Yeah.
Yes, I chose Milo Manara just to see who else is in my life.
Draw you as a sexy lady.
I'll take it.
Joke's on you. It's the story where the person gets scalped.
So I'll
you
take scalped it. In your story. I'll still be sexy.
Who would I want to draw my life?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to go with Eric Powell, because he can just draw himself.
I don't look like Eric Powell anymore, though. I used to. Now it would be Zach Galifianakis. No, let's see. Maybe Jim Starlin, because then I could fly around in outer space. And nice. I feel like that would be pretty cool. But Jim Starlin in, like, 1983. Let's just get that straight. All right. So thanks for the question, Sam. As always, if you guys have questions, you can send those questions to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, or you can send them to our Twitter. At Big Planet Comics.
Yep.
Or you can call our podcast hotline. Oh, I think I had a hotline question. We'll do that one next week.
How about we do it right now?
No. It's too much. It's too much work. We're going to do it next week. And
I was about to ask about that, because I heard someone was going to call in.
Oh, well, they left a message like a half hour ago. Yeah, but you can call that podcast hotline. Get in there.
What's that number?
Preferably a week or two in advance so Kevin can actually get around to doing it.
It's true. It's 1-703-539-CAST. That is 1-703-539, the letters that spell the word cast represented by numbers.
That was very confusing.
Whoa. It's all right. Nobody's going to call anyway. All right. So what should we do? Let's review these comics and get this thing over with.
Yeah.
That's the spirit.
That is the spirit.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, up first this week we've got The Answer, which is written by Mike Norton and Dennis Hopeless, and drawn by Mike the Man Norton. I believe he's the one that's called the man, right? Yeah, so these guys work together on X-Men Season 1. Along with Jamie McKelvey.
Yep.
And also Mike Norton is known for Battle
the
Pug.
Pug.
Yeah.
Battle Pug. And Revival.
Oh, yeah. And Revival, which is awesome.
And
yeah.
G.I. Joe.
So Answer is a 4-issue miniseries. It starts off with being about, is this girl who can solve puzzles. She solves a puzzle that leads her down a rabbit hole, and she finds some mysterious things going on. And then this guy named The Answer shows up
who's
got
a superhero.
Exclamation mark on his head. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty
it's kind of a weird mix of
it's weird
things.
Yeah, it's kind of fun and funny at first, and then there's this weird like I don't know, like almost like an evangelical priest type guy or like an infomercial guy who's like telling people about this thing that I'm not quite sure what it's about. That part was a little weird. But then it's interesting to see this other superhero who shows up and busts crimes, but he seems to be like one step ahead of everybody. And they cross paths once she's solving these puzzles. And I don't know. It's pretty cool.
Twists and turns.
Yeah.
There are those. It's pretty fun. Yeah, I don't know. I was a little disappointed once the superhero showed up just because I thought it was like...
It seemed kind of out of place. Or not out of place, but it seemed like a very good story without that needing to be in there.
But then what happens to the superhero near the end? And
there is a crazy twist.
It's pretty interesting.
There is. Yeah, and I thought the art was okay. I don't think it's Mike Norton's best, but I do think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'll read the next issue. I want to find out what the answer is.
I want to find out what the question is.
Right? I want to find out everything.
Isn't it Montoya now?
No, she doesn't exist anymore. There are no lesbians in the new DC universe. Well, there's Batwoman.
Is she not a lesbian anymore?
Did you guys see about that big Batwoman thing that was like a big kerfuffle on the internet?
When she got on a train and got killed?
No, it's like, that was another terrible thing. But, no, basically, you know those, like, college humor, like, villains of nerd culture thing?
Okay.
Like, in the Batwoman thing, it's like you open it up and you want to read about, like, this empowered woman and stuff. And then it's like, on the first page, it's like, villains of nerd culture, the imposter. And it's, like, all about, like, girls that pretend to be nerds and stuff. It's, like, the worst crap you've ever seen in your entire life. Yeah. But
wow, no.
Yeah, good times. Good work, DC.
Cool.
All right, up next we've got Dalen and Gol, Scandal in Port Angus. This is a new kids graphic novel. I don't know where this came from. I don't know who Orca Book Publishers are. Are they a new publisher?
As far as I know.
And Mike Dayus, or D's, the guy that did it, is a new guy, as far as I know, too.
Yeah, it just came out of nowhere, really.
But yeah, but I thought this was really fun. I don't know if you guys liked it or not, but it's basically about these two aliens called Dalen and Gol.
I forget what their names are.
Who are basically like, they're like pod racers.
Yeah, that part kind of threw me off. I was like, really?
But, and they're in a pod race, and then there's this other guy named Tunax, who seems to be cheating and beats them in a pod race. So they go to find out what's happening, and they get launched into our universe, basically. Yeah. And so they're trying to find out what's up, and it ends up Tunax is like stealing all this tuna to make like special fuel for his... his pod race.
Yeah.
This is our job. And
so true.
And so they meet up with this girl named Rachel, and it becomes sort of like a Goonies meets E.T. kind of story,
yeah,
I would say.
Fish out of water kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, waka waka.
And you know, it's a little predictable, I'd say. Yeah. But overall I think it's fun. It's you know, for like
it is fast paced, like that was good.
Like 6 to 10 year old kind of age range. And it has cute art. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty fast and funny, and it's got a little bit of a, I don't know, like a ecological message sort of in there.
About overfishing, I guess.
Yeah, about overfishing and...
And not, yeah, but it's like, it's weird because it like doesn't count because that's not even really what's going on.
That's true.
They're just like trading fish for like,
kind of
like space like, weapons.
Yeah. It's like one huge corporation taking all the fish kind of thing. But yeah, I know it's interesting and fun, and
I really like the art. It's like bright and poppy coloring, and just you know, goofy aliens and silly situations. Like there's some stuff it's just ridiculous, but it's like fun ridiculous. So
yeah, I think it really suits the story, and I thought it was a fun kids book.
Definitely. Yep,
indeed. All right, so up next we've got The End Times of Bran and Ben number one.
This is another mini series of four issues. It's one of those again co-written ones by James Asmus and Jim Festanti. And it was drawn by Rem Brew.
Can I ask, that is not the Chew artist, right?
No, but it looks exactly like
it. Like
I mean, it's a little different, but
blood exactly.
Looks a lot very similar. Yeah, unfortunately, this has a Jim Mafood cover, and Jim Mafood is a lot of people's cup of tea, but this was a very poor choice. Because like we said,
Mafood? It doesn't look like him.
Exactly. It looks like just him knocking it off in the worst way, and it's awful, and then the inside looks like the art to Chew. And
it's
like,
not that bad.
That's a terrible cover.
It's all right.
I don't like the art on the inside, so.
Oh, really? I like the art on the inside. Well, anyway, this one, I think, is my favorite of the week, so I will try to defend against Kevin. Basically.
Wait, what?
You just didn't like that art.
I don't think it's a favorite of the week.
Is it your favorite of the week? Anyway,
it's up there, though.
Yeah, let's.
I think so. Anyway, Bram and Ben are roommates, and Bram is taken to heaven by the rapture, which is the Christian idea that at the end of the world, or near the end of the world, all the good people will be taken to heaven. And then he quickly returns, and it finds out there was a clerical error, and the wrong Bram was taken up, and now he's back with you know, knowledge that everyone's gone to heaven who's good.
Yeah, he's the only one that knows that the rapture happened.
Right. So millions of people have disappeared and all gone to the Christian heaven. They have a funny cut scene where, you know, like all these Muslims in Turkey, nothing's happened to them because they're Muslim. Anyway, so it's full of like weird stuff like that. And then it's like what happens next. There's clearly like supernatural powers at work and some trying to figure out what to do with this guy who came back to life or back to Earth. Yeah. And then it's just like Ben freaking out because now that Bram Stoltz, what's going on, is like trying to go out to school and he's a teacher and just it's weird.
Except there are no kids left in the school because
right,
all the kids,
all kids are innocent.
Except one kid. And then they're like, what did you do?
Yeah. So that's what I think was strongest about this. It's like full of very clever writing. Like we said, the art's very like the Chew artist who I can't remember.
Yeah. I definitely thought it was really funny.
Ben something.
Rob Guillory.
Rob Guillory. There you go. But yeah, the writing was like kind of sharp and witty and weird because like for a lot of people they start thinking it's the end of the world somehow because all these people have vanished. So there's like cultists and conspiracies and I don't know, just weird character moments. And I thought it was really fun.
I thought it was really funny. I felt a little bit at times like it was trying a little too hard at times.
But yeah, I feel like it's kind of overwritten in some ways, but
generally yeah. I thought it was pretty funny. I had enough chuckles in it where like every once in a while I like just like kind of like
yeah, that's it, yeah. It was definitely that like tell a bunch of jokes and like some of them are gonna stick and some of them aren't,
right?
But you know, I didn't think it was bad. It was just like some of the humor didn't really do it for me. It was a little. I thought the beginning sequence was great when everybody just has no idea what's going on and people are being raptured.
Yeah.
And the fact that the guy comes back because of a clerical error like really reminds me of something you'd seen like a Monty Python movie or something right. like that.
But yeah, like the humor's all kind of dark. Like they start going around and like finding all the people who raptured, like all their possessions left behind. So they're just stealing wallets out of piles of clothes on the street and like cars that, you know, their driver got raptured. He suddenly the car crashes and kills people. And
they're
like,
all like paying for their lunches with credit cards from people that were raptured and stuff like that.
There's a lot of that in here, which I think is very clever.
Reminded me a lot of, and I can't remember the name of a book. There was a book like that came out a few years ago. It was called like Killer of Demons, I think.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it reminded me a lot of that, which was a book about a guy that's basically tasked to kill demons, but they look like humans and nobody else can tell they're demons. Everybody thinks he's a murderer.
Or he might just be insane.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a good for something about the humor and the way it was told reminded me a lot of that. But it's just fun, it's light.
I like the relationship between the two because which one's the one that goes to heaven?
Bram.
Bram. And then
Ben is still trying to be good.
Ben is like, why am I here? Like, I'm a good guy. Yeah. Like, he's trying to figure out, like, why. And he's trying to make up for it. He's like, no, we can't do all these things. I got to get into heaven.
And yeah. Bram is, like, despicable.
Like, yeah, he's still like, yeah, I can lie about everything, and I can use this for fame and fortune and sleeping with all these girls because all the bad girls are still on Earth.
Oh, another funny thing is that whenever a new character shows up, it shows, like, why they didn't go to heaven.
Yeah, they have, like, flashbacks, which are all pretty
funny. Ends up being pretty funny sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. I really liked it.
I liked it.
Bram and Ben, End Times of Bram and Ben.
Got it.
Sweet Life of Bram and Ben. Okay, up next we've got a new Avengers comic. This is called New Avengers.
New Avengers.
Number one and number two came out, so usually we just talk about number ones, and we're like, it was a good setup. But we're
double review.
Yeah, but because Marvel puts out a new issue of every book every week now. Yeah, yeah. We have two issues. So this is Jonathan Hickman, and who's the artist?
Steve Epting.
Oh, yeah, Steve Epting, of course.
Captain America
of Captain America fame. And Jonathan Hickman of lots of other stuff
Captain
fame.
America fame. No,
of Captain America fame as well. Of Fantastic Four fame, I would say, at this point. And I thought this was like a cool Avengers
it's
book.
It's pretty cool. This is kind of the companion book to Avengers. It's about the Illuminati, which Bendis set up years ago. Which features like Iron Man, Namor, Mr. Fantastic, Black Bolt, and who else is in it?
Well, used to have Professor Xavier.
Professor X. And so, yeah. And
it's like a secret conspiracy group trying to run the universe.
Yeah, and this new story has Beast and Black Panther, who weren't in it before, but Black Panther was actually one of the ones that was supposed to be in the original group but declined. And then the first issue basically sets up like why he decides that it's necessary. It's kind of weird because the first issue is pretty much just a Black Panther comic. The other characters don't really show up until like the last panel.
But it's awesome.
But it's pretty cool. Yeah, Black Panther sees that something really crazy is happening. He sees an Earth get destroyed and other Earths exploding, and he doesn't know what's going on. And so he's like, we need help. And then the second issue is basically kind of
putting the team together.
All of them meeting and setting up this huge story.
Yeah, the second issue is very much like what Bendis was doing in the old Illuminati stuff. It's like just guys sitting around a table and talking about what's going on. And he sets up the most Jonathan Hickman-ass story you've ever seen in your entire life.
Right.
It's like, you know, alternate universes, and when they get close to colliding, well, like one, it's so crazy. There's like basically an alternate Earth, and like
a structure of all its alternate Earths
is becoming like unstable because this Earth was ended before its time by like malevolent forces, and so now it's affecting all the Earths, and they're all going to end early. Like it's this crazy Jonathan Hickman thing.
Epic.
And it has like diagrams and stuff in it because it's a Jonathan Hickman comic. But besides that, it's like really engaging. Like all these guys just sitting around talking about what they're going to do,
and there's some great character interactions. Like especially
got
between
different personalities.
Black Panther
and
Namor have like an amazing scene in the second issue.
Yeah,
it's
like
so
Black
good.
Panther's like, "Hey, we're going to take care of business, and then I'm going to kill you."
Yeah, because he destroyed Wakanda basically.
And I thought it was like really tense and
and it seems big, like with actual like consequences. Like a lot of these big events are like, oh cool, they're gonna fight aliens.
Yeah,
this one you're like, oh man, they better do something.
And kind of gets to the core of what this thing is. It's like they're supposed to meet together to make really hard decisions. they're about to make some really really hard decisions, and where they end up at the end is like made my head explode.
It plays a lot off the old Marvel ideas. Like they use the universe of the Marvel universe really
and follows
well.
Up on a lot of the old Illuminati stuff.
That's what I mean, like they're really building on old
and there's
stuff.
Hints ties to the other Avengers book, which is cool.
And I also feel like people that may have been missing Hickman's Fantastic Four and FF stuff, this is definitely like I would say this is the book that's the most kind of like the spiritual success.
Yeah, like Avengers stuff. Is like all the big action, and this is kind of like the behind the scenes stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, like a lot of this reminded me like a lot of the like Reed Richards from Different Worlds stuff from Fantastic
Very
Four
that like
Hickman
that.
Wrote. Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I think Hickman is doing two pretty crazy big Avengers books at once.
And I feel Steve Epting's pretty perfect for this. He's got kind of a darker tone.
True.
I don't know. He's good at drawing characters talking to each other.
Yeah, true.
He's good in dark rooms.
He's good at facial expressions and creating mood. Yeah. So it works pretty well. All right. Up next, we've got a book that works great, you guys. This is Savage Wolverine number one by Frank Cho and Frank Cho. And
So before this, my thought was, Frank Cho's really good at drawing like big-breasted women and dinosaurs. I don't know about Wolverine, but then I was like, oh, wait, Wolverine's in the Savage Land.
With Shaun of the She-Devil.
With Shaun of the She-Devil.
Yeah, and that's basically what happens in this book.
Yeah. If you read Shaun of the She-Devil and you like that, you'll probably really like this. It's not exactly a follow-up, but... It's got raptors and Shauna in it.
And more carnage than you've seen in a while from Wolverine. Like, he's actually hacking and slashing people to bits.
Yeah, because people in the Savage Land aren't really people.
That's true.
Yeah, probably since, what was that, The Best There Is. That was the last time we saw Wolverine.
Yeah.
Wholesale murdering people. But yeah, it's Frank Cho. If you guys know Frank Cho, he likes to draw women in loincloths, and there's a lot of that in this. The story is really goofy, but it's kind of fun to read.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like very pulpy Marvel.
It's like the kind of thing that it's hard to recommend to anybody to actually spend their money on.
I mean, if you like Frank Cho's art, you'll like it. It's pretty fun and funny and lighthearted. And there's a giant island shaped like man thing, which is pretty sweet.
And there's a part where Frank Cho draws Shauna the She-Devil, and her loincloth is coming off, and then it looks like the colorist had to come in and draw a second loincloth under it, which is pretty amazing. And then the colorist also had to draw underwear on Shauna in one of the panels as well, because Frank Cho is a pervert.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah, but basically, he just fights dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah, it's fun.
Like, Neanderthals or something.
Whatever. Yeah. You
Carnage.
Know, prehistoric, savage landy stuff.
Yeah.
All right, up next we've got a book that's... this is a crazy book. This is Star Wars number one.
Cool.
And this is...
Nice.
This is Brian Wood and Carlos Donda.
On a hilarious note, before we start, some dude came into the store today and he walked up to me. He's like, "Have you ever seen Star Wars?" And I was like, "Wait, the movies?" Yeah,
I've seen it.
It was weird. He asked me like...
You should have done
like
the entire conversation in quotes from Star Wars and see if you noticed.
It was like, he asked me like it was some obscure, like weird movie. It was just it was so strange.
Wow.
Anyway.
So yeah, I'm like thinking about
Star Wars.
Having never seen Star Wars, and if there's anybody that hasn't ever seen... I'm sure
there are a lot.
Yeah.
But they're mainly girls.
Jared.
I'm not joking.
If any girls are angry, send your emails to... Jared at hooters.com. But this is Yeah, this is a weird book. It's basically like the idea that only the first Star Wars movie exists, A New Hope, and then Brian Wood is like telling his own story that takes place after that. So this whole thing takes place.
So this is like Star Wars number one from Marvel in 1978.
I guess it is, yeah, except without as many like giant bunnies.
Giant green rabbits and Jedi Knights in suits of medieval armor.
Yeah. So
those comics are awesome.
This follows like all the basically the main characters
from
the movie.
The weird thing about this is that it starts out like with the most boring intro I think they could have started. It's like Leia flying around.
It's like the Trade Federation
X-Wing.
Is no longer a threat. Let us tell you more things about this universe that are boring.
Yeah, it's just like Leia kind of explaining everything that's going on, which is kind of not as interesting. But
I was going to get to that part after I just described what it was basically about. But yeah, that is definitely what happens.
Let Kevin try and finish describing it.
Yeah, it's basically after the destruction of the Death Star and they're... Now I'm so thrown off.
They're looking for a new rebel base because they had to flee their planet because the Empire knows where they are. Darth Vader's flying around a bunch of Star Destroyers trying to catch them.
And they crash on a planet after fighting some TIE interceptors and people don't respect Princess Leia as a fighter pilot. But this is like, it's like a really weird, it's like hard to see how it even fits into the... what was going on after Star. This book is like melting my brain right now. I can't even talk
wow.
about it. But the beginning of it is really like really super long-winded, like Nick was saying. They describe what the Rebel Alliance is, what the Empire is.
It's like Star Wars for people who have never seen or heard of Star Wars, who would never be buying a comic book about Star Wars. Sort of. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. But I mean, it has like definitely refers to a lot of stuff that you have to have read Star Wars to know.
Yeah, it's like describing...
I mean, seen Star Wars.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, who would be buying this?
Well, no, but I think what Nick's saying is, like, they describe what the Rebel Alliance is, but then, like, right after that, they're like, hey, it's Wedge Antilles.
Yeah.
Like most people don't
they're
know.
Like, yeah, they're like, right. We just blew up the Death Star. Like, people don't know.
They don't know?
Yeah. Blew up the Death Star.
But after that weird kind of intro, I thought it got a little better. It had, like, introduced a little bit of Han and Chewie, and I thought Chewie's sounds were well written. Like
that
I thought,
is what we look
like
for
I
conflict.
Could actually hear them when I was reading it, and I don't know. It seemed like it felt like Harrison Ford a little bit.
Yeah,
is it just because he's like saying direct lines from the Star Wars movie?
Nah. And then I thought the most interesting part of it was Darth Vader. And something I hadn't actually thought about too much, about how, like, the Death Star was such a huge failure, and that, like, he, like, you never really see him get punished in the other movies for, like, failing so terribly.
That's a good point.
And in this one, it's like, you know, the Emperor shows up and he's like, you bungled everything. Like,
that's true.
You need to make this right. And like,
I thought that scene was so stupid. He's like, it cost us 30 billion credits. I don't know. It just seems so weird.
It's
like
weird.
The Emperor like
our
complaining
tax returns
about money.
Are insignificant in the face of the
I don't
force.
Know. I thought it was pretty interesting. And then, so then I didn't even think about the fact that, like Vader in this is like, nowhere in the first movie, because obviously in the first movie they didn't know that like Luke and Leia were going to be his children or whatever. But in this, he's like, "Wait, Skywalker!"
Yeah, oh, yeah. Finally.
There's a bunch of I thought it was weird there were so many lines like directly from the movies in this.
Really?
Like he says, "I have a bad feeling about this," and then like the first time we see Han Solo, the first time we see Darth Vader, he's like, "What is thy bidding, master?" It's just like all this like stuff directly from the movie. I don't know. It's like not that this was a bad comic. I think I was just really excited about it because it's Brian Wood,
right.
Who writes DMZ and writes Massive
and Northlanders.
Yeah, and I was like, all right, so you know, finally somebody's going to do a good Star Wars book. And then it got off to such a slow start that it was just like, I'm more excited to read the second issue because I know there's like not much left that they can explain at this point, so it'll be fine. They're just like, this is Princess Leia and this is this person.
And
it's just like,
I think like it sets up everything. And I think after this it'll be a little more smooth. Because it's going to be like Leia and Luke looking for a new rebel base while Darth Vader tries to kill them. So, I mean, that's pretty simple.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it could lead to some fun stories.
Yeah, so that's...
And Princess Leia kicks more butt in this than she does...
Yeah, that's kind of one of the more fun things about
the
it.
Later movies, yeah.
Yeah. But, so that's Star Wars number one. We got a few more books left. Too many more books. We should
so
cut some of these books off here.
Nah, let's do it quick.
So we got Sullivan Sluggers. This is a hardcover graphic novel from Mark Andrew Smith. Is that the name of the guy that wrote it?
Yep.
Yeah.
And James Stocco. And we all know and love James Stocco. He draws Orcstain and Godzilla Half Century War and
Wonton Soup.
Yeah.
And Mark Andrew Smith did Aqua Leung and
Lung.
Is
it's
it?
It's L-E-U-N-G, but it's Lung.
Aqua Leung.
Like the last name.
Gladstone School for World Conquerors.
Oh yeah, he did great. Do that. Yeah, so this is an interesting book because it started off as a graphic novel from Image, and then somewhere along the way it became a Kickstarter that was supposed to be a graphic novel, and then they made so much money off of it that now it is a giant slipcased hardcover graphic novel.
Yeah. With extra print and insert of baseball cards. And which will explain why they're baseball cards.
Yeah, and it's huge, and which is great because James Stokoe's art is very detailed, and it looks awesome at this size. And it's about a baseball team fighting demons.
So it starts off with this team is like the minorest of minor leagues. They ride around in a bus.
Well, they're all like
for
failed
whoever.
Baseball stars.
Almost all of them are like guys who made it and almost made it in the majors and now are washed up or hurt or whatever, including their crazy alcoholic coach. But the main character you kind of follow at the beginning is the young kid who's like, this is his way to try and make it. And so they end up going into a town which is cursed in some fashion, and they rapidly find out that means that everyone in this town morphs into monsters when the sun goes down. And so they get halfway through a baseball game, and then the other team turns into monsters, and they have to fight their way out with baseball bats and, you know, finding pitchforks and chainsaws and guns. And it's like the best monster movie ever. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, and that's when it really gets going. I feel like the setup for it is a little bit like, There's the dialogue and stuff isn't that great, but then once you get to the part where it's like James Stokoe drawing monsters, it's just like just sit back and enjoy like all these, especially when the monsters start to get really big.
Yes.
And when I say big, I mean like this is already a big book. It's probably like 12 inches by 15 inches or something like that. But then there's also one of the things is like a 3-page foldout of a giant monster, and it's awesome. Like because James Stokoe is awesome.
Yeah. The thing I kind of liked about it is Stokoe, like in his Orkstein books, is like he does a lot of Godzilla too. Like his work's very busy. He's kind of doing that Jeff Darrow thing where he just has so much stuff going on the page. And in this, there are several scenes. They're at some little Texas town where it's just like a farm or a field, and it's this huge double page spread, which is kind of like almost simple and quiet for him, but it lets you see how much awesome his art is just in a.
Yeah, it's a much softer
touch.
James Stokoe's. Yeah. I don't know.
Until it's not.
Yeah, and then it goes insane again.
Even those parts, like, the character designs are a little more simple. Like, everything's a little more smooth. I don't know what the thing is. It's not as, like, hyper-detailed.
Yeah.
Like, the monsters are kind of hyper-detailed, but then, like, everything else is pretty.
Yeah, I think that also might be because it's, like, bigger.
Maybe.
But, it looks great. No, the characters are great. I mean, I think one thing is you don't see really a lot of human characters in Orkstein, right. But that's if you look at the human characters in there are definitely moments like that in Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like. But then in Godzilla, there are also just parts where they're like giant buildings falling down and like rubble and scaly monsters all over the place, and it's awesome. But yeah, overall, I think this is cool. There's this version of it that's expensive, and then I think there's also a regular paperback coming out. So
I don't know when that's going to come out. So,
but it is soon-ish. But it is going to come out.
Yeah. But I mean, this. It has a few, horror movie cliche kind of stuff going on, but it's done in a really funny way.
Yeah, they're, like, abandoned farmhouses and chainsaws and, like...
Yeah. And, I don't know, it's really fun and funny, and the characters are all distinct personalities, and, yeah. It does some really cool stuff that's very comic booky, like, there's a part where they open a closet full of weapons, and then it attaches a picture of each character who's going to use that weapon to it. It's pretty funny. It's good.
Real great moments like that. Yeah,
it's good, and it looks great.
Yeah. So good.
All right, up next we got a Spider-Man book.
Spider-Man.
Like we do every episode.
We do, no doubt. This is Superior Spider-Man number one. This is spinning out of the stuff that happened in Amazing Spider-Man 700.
Yeah.
Yep.
And which we can say now what happened, right?
Yeah, and this book has been out for like 2 or 3 weeks, so we could probably talk about what happens in this book too.
Yeah, Dr. Octopus kills Spider-Man and Mary Jane and Aunt May.
Finally.
And then Mary's. Electro switches bodies with Captain America.
I saw that coming.
Let's
so if
discuss.
You haven't read this...
Oh, yeah. By the way, this is by Dan Slott and Ryan Stegman. Did I say that?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. No. But if you haven't read this, we're probably going to spoil. So
yeah.
I'm going to spoil the end.
Okay. Well, Nick's going to spoil all of it. Go ahead, Nick.
So the one thing that's funny about this book is that after 700, there was like that huge outcry and crazy reactions, but people, you know, overreacting and stuff.
That's what they do.
And they're like, you've ruined our childhood. Peter Parker, he has to be Spider-Man. He can't be dead. And then Peter Parker shows up in this comic.
Well, kind of.
Kind of.
Yeah, basically. I mean,
I think everyone was more upset that Peter Parker was not going to be involved at all anymore.
So basically in 700, Dr. Octopus takes over Spider-Man's body, and Spider-Man's in Dr. Octopus' body, and... Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man's body kills Dr. Octopus with Peter Parker's mind inside.
That was the most complicated thing I've ever heard.
But anyway, this starts off...
That was the simplest way to say it.
Yeah.
And so this starts off with Dr. Octopus trying to be Spider-Man, but obviously still kind of Dr. Octopus and villainous and saying very Dr. Octopus-y things like, hey, guys, and you know, like...
Yeah.
He sounds like a supervillain still, and he's like...
A very stuffy old supervillain.
And he starts starts using all of the lab that Peter Parker has to make all the inventions he wanted to make all his life. Except he finds out, you know, he realizes that Peter Parker's getting all the credit for the stuff he's making, and that makes him angry. And then he's kind of trying to get with Mary Jane, which is kind of creepy and weird. And they make it really creepy and weird because they focus on his, like, drooling mouth and stuff. And, like, you're like, oh, God, this is going to be a, like, terrible, like this is gonna go awful. Like Dr. Octopus is so creepy, and he almost kills somebody, and then Peter Parker shows
up. Being like super violent and crazy, and that's the cool twist
to this, which will make this a pretty fun series. It's like it's kind of got that weird Firestorm kind of thing going on.
Yeah, like Peter Parker, because when you say Peter Parker shows up, I mean Peter Parker is like in his head.
Yeah, yeah.
So and not only in his head, but like trying to control what his body under Dr. Octopus's mind
is basically
doing.
He's like, who is Jake Ellison?
Yeah, yeah. When Peter Parker died, his mind kind of went back into his body, but he's wrestling for control because Dr. Octopus is still in control.
But that didn't really... Did that seem like a twist to you? That seemed to almost be implied in like Amazing Spider-Man 700 at the end of it, that Peter Parker's like in there.
A little bit. They purposely left it a little like vague because they wanted you to feel like, oh man, this is it.
And it worked because everyone got crazy.
I was kind of wonder what I want to hear reactions from those people like after they read this.
Well, they're
like,
not going to read.
I'm sure they still hate it.
Yeah, that's true.
Probably. And which is dumb because this is like really funny, really fun, and I don't know. It's an exciting direction. I think
it is too. I think it's like a fun. I think it's a fun story. And one of the complaints people have is like they're just going to change it back. It's like, well, who cares if they're going to change it back? Like
everything,
if it's good until they change it back, what does it matter? Like it's a comic book story.
They're probably the same people that complain that Captain America is Steve Rogers now.
right. Yeah, yeah. True. That like he, you know, like that's the thing when characters die and people are like they're just going to come back. It's like, well, but the story where he died, if it was dramatic and fun, like what's the matter?
Yeah. And the thing about this that I think one of the funny things this is kind of like it feels like it'll be like a backdoor into kind of making Peter Parker back into like a down on his luck character because Dr. Octopus is gonna ruin his life.
Because there were a lot of interesting points in this where he's like, oh no, I'm hanging out with some superheroes who could read my mind. There's like a lot of, realize there's a lot of things in the superhero universe that could find out that he's not really Peter Parker's mind.
Peter Parker has been like flying too high recently. Yeah. Like he's got girlfriends and he's got a job that pays really well. Yeah. And like, you know, he's on the Avengers.
He's friends with the police.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like he's got to have everybody hate him and think he's a menace again.
Well, they put out a teaser for like upcoming issues and it's just Spider-Man and the Avengers and it says fired on it.
Oh, really?
It's just pretty funny. And that's amazing. Like, this is going to, I don't know. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. I think it's fun already. And I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Yep.
Just like our next book, Threshold from DC Comics.
This is the new book that is replacing something that got canceled. I don't know what one of the books that got canceled. Maybe we Frankenstein. I hope it's not replacing Frankenstein.
By the way, I was joking when I said it was worth checking out. This is written by Keith Giffen, and this is two different stories. One drawn by Tom Rainey, one by Scott Collins.
One is about aliens, and the other one is about aliens.
Yes. So the first story is called The Hunted. And it's the basic plot of it is there's like a Running Man type game.
I was gonna say,
like
Running Man.
Yeah, or mixed with like the Hunger Games or something like that.
Sort of.
It's like Running Man in society. It's they're trying to track down people and they can hide wherever, but then anyone can kill them.
Yeah, and these people are all criminals who are sort of put into this game. And then, like people can hunt them down and they get rewards and stuff. And I don't know.
That's the plot.
See,
that's
the plot. Here's the thing with this, though. All right, so that's like kind of an interesting setup, you know? It's like wanted fugitives, anybody
and then,
in the galaxy.
The person they're after is a Green Lantern.
Anybody in the galaxy can hunt them down. yeah, and this guy, the main problem with this is that they chose this
Hal
terrible
Jordan.
Character,
Kyle Rayner,
who's like this random Green Lantern.
Oh, just some new Green Lantern
who was, I don't know, in New Guardians or something.
Yeah,
I don't know. And then some other random characters that nobody knows. And the fact is, like, this is supposed to be their book where they do all their cosmic stuff kind of comes together. And in, I know that in upcoming issues, like, they have that stupid Captain Carrot showing up, but they have like Blue Beetle and other characters. I'm like, why don't just start this issue with like a reality show where people are hunting these wanted fugitives and have them all be like recognizable characters, like Blue Beetle and all that character, like just to get people interested in it. Instead,
you don't
think
the
most
boring. Don't think Jedaiah Call, aka the deep cover Green Lantern, is interesting.
It's so boring.
It's really boring. And
I
then
I thought it was a, it was okay.
I
think it was boring.
Like,
but
he's just on the run with this girl, and they just the writing was like killing me.
Yeah,
all the slang they make up and stuff is just like everybody's like glork me if he ain't the flarpin plark bluck, you duke.
Yeah, it's like that'll be three sleazebies, you jackamole.
Like, and he's like he's like a slop pipe. Why am I not surprised?
It's like, it seems, it's not good. And then, like, the thing is, I didn't actually finish it. I got,
oh, really?
I got
oh,
like
I finished it.
Two-thirds of the way through, and I was like, I don't want to read this anymore. And then I was like, I'll try to read the Lark Flea story because maybe that'll be cool. And it's got Scott Collins on art, which I like. Scott Collins.
Yeah, I was excited when I got to the Lark Flea story.
And then it was not good. It was also good. Really boring.
It did have some of the, some, you know, there's, and I will say some of the art in the first story, it's really uneven, but some of it is actually really cool.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's not great, but then like some of the pages are awesome, like, you know, I don't know,
yeah,
like some
of those
looks really
like
cool.
I like Tom Rady in general,
yeah, but then good. And then the art in the backup part with Lar Flees is really cool. I think I like Scott Collins, and you know, the initial conceit of the story of like, hey, the Guardians have their big book that they write in, I want to have a big book that I write in,
yeah,
and then he's writing his life story in it,
yeah,
is like a funny idea.
Yeah.
And Lar Flees has like the character has a funny voice, I feel like like the way he's written. But it just kind of stalls out and doesn't ever get very interesting, I feel like. It's all very,
there's not much to it.
Yeah, there's just not much to it.
Yeah. And then it ends
that
like
last page is the worst. I just anyway.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
That's Threshold.
All right.
So another
sorry you guys.
Out the park hit from DC.
Oh man. Okay, so we've got another Image book up next. This is called Todd, the Ugliest Kid on Earth. This is by MK Perker and is this Ken Christensen?
Yes.
Have these guys done anything before? I mean, I would assume
they sound familiar, but I don't know.
We should look.
Also, the art is by MK Perker. So this is backwards. The art's by it's written by Ken Christensen with art by MK Perker.
But again, he co-plotted together,
and then they wrote, and then they plotted it together. Yeah,
co-created.
So this is a crazy book. This is about this is about a little kid named Todd
who's really ugly.
So he wears a bag over his head, and it starts out with him like meeting a new girl who's moved into the neighborhood, and he's trying to become friends with her, and inadvertently like ends up just like terrorizing her because he's being picked on by these bullies.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing that's going on here is. A little bit later, he meets this crazy serial killer who's killing little kids.
Yep. Yeah.
But it's like a...
And very quickly has killed the new little girl who moved to the neighborhood.
It's funny because he's about to kill Todd, and he's like, he takes a bag over off of his head, and he's like, I only kill beautiful kids.
I don't kill. But then Todd's like, hey, you want to be friends?
Todd's a weird kid.
He's so innocent and like, he's the ultimate like... cute, innocent, nice kid.
who just like sees the good in everybody, even guys who are,
I don't want to say see the good, but it's oblivious to evil things.
Yeah. And so because of circumstances and the aforementioned dolls that the girl had that Todd was involved in or whatever, everybody thinks that he's the person murdering these kids. And that's basically
that's basically
what happens in the first issue.
Yep.
With like mixed with some stuff from his home life and his redneck dad and like some other stuff.
And the detective that's trying to solve this serial killer case.
Who there's some weird stuff.
There's
really
a lot of weird characters.
He's a very funny like Commissioner Gordon analog.
Like Commissioner Gordon if Commissioner Gordon was sexually attracted to Barbie dolls.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this is a strange book. It's a very weird tone.
Yeah.
It's like the other book, The End Times of Bram and Ben, like there's like a joke in every panel in this, I feel like.
Yeah.
And also like that, I feel like some of them work. And for me in this one particular, like a lot of them don't work.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? I like this one a little better than End Times.
When I read this, I was like, Nick is going to love this book.
I really like the art.
I thought the art was really good.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing that's like surprising about this book. Is
caricaturish
like,
on the faces, particularly in like close-ups and stuff. It just...
He's got a very distinct style.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look like anybody else that I can think of. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, in a weird way, of like Troy Nixie, if you guys remember Troy Nixie. But, which nobody does, I'm sure. But, yeah, I don't know. And then at times, like, of like more kiddie stuff, like Chris Eliopoulos or something like that. But, yeah, it's kind of, you just kind of have to see it.
I really love the art, and I thought the story was interesting enough and kind of funny. I like Todd as a character. I think he's pretty funny. Just he's like completely oblivious to everything,
and he's got a bag on his head.
Yeah, and I thought the ending was pretty hilarious. And I don't know. It definitely
seemed to me like a comic that was like I was like, Nick is gonna love this.
Yep.
Because it's like a lot of like off color jokes and like.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's pretty good. I liked it a lot. I liked the little bully too, and that I don't know. It's just, it's funny.
Full of weird.
It's not
characters.
Like the best thing you'll ever read, but,
no, but
it's
fun. Really fun.
Yeah. And the art's great.
And it's got a quote from Danny Trejo on the cover. So, like,
right.
That guy's an expert on comics. Stuff like that is so weird to me.
Yeah, it's the weirdest.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right, up next we've got just two books left, a couple Marvel books. The first one is Uncanny X-Force, number one. This is written by Sam Humphries, who writes Sacrifice, which Nick and I were talking about earlier, that we need to get a hold of that book because we've never read it. And also has been writing, he's been writing Ultimates recently.
Yeah.
And he wrote the...
High Earth.
He writes High Earth, which is pretty good. Yeah. He wrote that weird one-shot.
And then this
Our Love Is Real.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the thing that probably a lot of people know him for. And then this is drawn by Ron Garney, who I always think of as a Hulk artist, but he's drawn a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. He's kind of leveled up, I feel, in this.
Yeah, his art in this, I feel like, definitely looks very modern, which is something that, you know, Ron Garney's been around for a while. So, yeah, so this is spinning out of the just recently finished Uncanny X-Force. Yeah. And it's kind of about Psylocke getting the team back together.
Well... Actually, it's about Psylocke not wanting to get the team back together.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, she's like, I don't want to be a killer anymore, and I don't want to do all these things. And she's hanging around with Storm, who's also going through some terrible stuff.
She's going through some stuff.
Going through some stuff, and then they're having some girl talk, and then Storm's like, I need you to help me with something. And they go to stop a drug deal, or not a drug deal, a drug dealer who's giving this drug to kind of like ravers, sort of, and like controlling their minds, and ends up being.
You mean the drug Tau?
Tau.
Together as one?
Yeah. And and they find out that drug dealer is Spiral.
Who is a person from comics, right?
Yeah. Who's a six-armed?
Six-armed.
She's a different person
from
than
Mojo World.
Lady Deathstrike?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's from Mojo World. And they also run into Puck, which is like the weirdest thing. I'm like, wait, Puck is in this book?
I thought Puck was dead.
They mentioned that. He's like, well, he's in hell. He's back.
There's a part where they're like, Puck went in hell for a little while and he's back.
When did he come back? Oh, well, no, he was in the gay wedding issue.
Yeah. He came back during Jason Aaron's Wolverine stuff.
He's a homophobe, right? Wasn't that established in that issue? Awesome.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing to have him in it. But anyway... It's weird that this is just kind of weirdly paced. Like, it's mostly about Storm and Psylocke trying to stop Spiral from dealing these drugs or whatever. But then it's also got these random interludes where Bishop is like, "I'm back." He's like, "I'm back from wherever he was in the future or whatever." They actually do a pretty good job of explaining where all the characters are, and it deals with a lot of the fallout from Uncanny X-Force with Psylocke, and it actually takes place like 6 months after that. So like some stuff is missing in between. Because you're like, where's Phantom X? And then,
you find out
where Phantom X is. And, it's
and
like
what he's been doing.
The craziest ending.
To me, that was the most interesting part of the book. I felt like the main story felt like a little bit like...
And their mission was kind of like...
Yeah, it was like a little kind of like Monster of the Week. It was like a little too episodic for a first issue, I felt like.
Yeah.
I think that was the problem. Is coming off of a very long Uncanny X-Force run under Remender, this one is not... I think a very good intro issue in a lot of ways.
It's like you think about the beginning of that series and like what was going on already. And like, in the beginning.
Yeah, that one's just like team go big bad guy. This one's like we're kind of a lot of what,
but
weird
it also doesn't
and...
fall into that like weird like getting the team together thing that a lot of things do.
It's they are doing that, but they do manage to wrap it around a story. So there's it's not like reading those like six issues of like Straczynski's Thor or whatever, where it's literally just Thor going around and like finding people.
I don't know. I thought it was fun enough, and I think the coloring is really cool. It's got this weird kind of noir but neon look to it, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's very like a lot of it takes place in nightclubs, which I think like is part of the reason for that. It kind of reminded me of do you remember like the Spider-Man issue where they're like the Alice in Wonderland villains and they're like all in a nightclub? It reminded me of the coloring in that for some reason. But it's, you know, it's good. It's just like inevitably you're going to compare it to the last Uncanny X-Force. And maybe it'll get there, but I feel like it doesn't start there.
No, it doesn't. But it's got, I thought the relationship between Storm and Psylocke was pretty interesting. And
that's true.
I don't know. It's got some interesting setup, and I have no idea where it's going to go, which is kind of cool.
True.
Yeah, we'll see.
They're gonna fight Bishop.
I'm interested to see what's going on with Bishop because he's been in the future for like years or whatever.
So that's Uncanny X-Force. Yep. We've just got one more book left this week, and that is Young Avengers number one. We've all been eagerly awaiting this book.
People have been hyped for this.
It's probably the most eagerly anticipated.
They're like, a new Scott Pilgrim.
Part of that was because of this Brian Lee O'Malley cover, which was awesome.
Yeah.
But besides that, the content of this book, I feel like, is pretty good. So this is by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, who worked together on Phonogram.
Yeah.
And then also Mike Norton is helping out McKelvey on the art on this, which he also did on X-Men Season 1.
And this is bringing the Phonogram feel to this in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because Kieran Gillen has been working for Marvel for a while, doing Journey into Mystery with like Kid Loki. And Jamie McKelvey's also been working with Marvel. He was drawing Defenders for a while. And now they're finally both
come together
in Marvel, where they've both been for a while. It's pretty interesting.
This feels very pop in the same way that Phonogram did. It's like kind of modern and cutting, and
one of the interviews I read that Kieran Gillen wanted the fights in this to be like music videos.
Wow.
And that very much kind of happens in this, and like exactly like that. Like it feels like a music video in the beginning with like lyrics and stuff.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like this 2-page spread with lots of little panels and like captions and like what people are thinking, and just
those two pages are some of
the best I've seen in a long time.
The best things I've seen ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's like very indicative of what this comic is. Like it feels different than, like, I feel like a lot of people, you just flip through this and you're like, I don't know if I'd be interested in this or not. But when you read it, it's like so It switches between like that like fun action stuff that you guys are talking about, but then like really character driven stuff. Yeah. Like I'd say the centerpiece of this is like a conversation between Wiccan and Hulkling, who are like boyfriends, who were members of Young Avengers before, and like that their relationship is like the most important thing. I feel like that happens.
Yeah,
in this book.
And they're just having like a huge argument over are they going to be heroes or not, and it's just like 3 or 4 pages of talking heads, but it's like handled really well by McKelvey, just like doing the art back and forth.
The
sharp
thing about
dialogue
this
and
is that they all feel like young characters. Yeah. They feel like teenagers, and they have kind of teenager problems. And he's really good at doing that, finding that young voice. And it helps that Jamie McKelvey's art is so great, and everybody looks so hip.
Yeah, it's like maybe not everybody is like doing the smartest thing all the time. Like they're not just like superheroes. They're like. You know, they're
normal
like teens and they make mistakes. And sometimes they say dumb stuff.
And they're all like driven by hormones, like everybody is.
But it's also like really good cutting between like two characters, and then one of them will meet up with a third, who then that third one will meet up with a fourth. Like they really move it along so everyone's connected through people in like a very smooth flowing way.
Yeah. The whole book flows really well from scene to scene. Like the transitions are all handled really well. Sometimes that can be jarring in comics. Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like they did it really well. I liked all the dialogue.
Yeah.
I thought the coloring was really good.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I like the whole book. There's one part when Hulkling and Wiccan make up and they're like, we're sickening, aren't we? And that part I was like, ugh. But besides that,
it's a little too
Kevin
sweet.
It was a little too sweet. Like, you're not sickening at all.
It was a little too sweet. Plus, I think Miss America is like the coolest character.
Yeah.
I loved Vengeance, the last series. I think she debuted in that, right?
Yeah.
Which was
Joe Casey and
Nick Dragata. I don't know. I just like her because she, you know, she dresses to me like what a teenage superhero would actually dress like.
Right. Yeah.
And it's fun to see her interact with Loki, who's like
he's
such a funny character, just because he's so like he's so like Spade basically, because he's like I'm the god of mischief, and but he's just like this little kid. And then at the end of this, I feel like they set up
crazy twist,
like what could be. It's like a really messed up twist,
epic twist.
And but it's all like, but even the twist isn't like, oh, it's just this big supervillain shows up or whatever.
It's, no, it's like Loki's been setting it up. He's like, oh, something bad's going to happen. And then, like, there's a huge conversation earlier that sets up what happens. And,
and then it's like a bad guy, but it's got a real, like, emotional, like, gut shot to it, too, which is, like, fits in perfectly with what this book is. And, like, I'm really excited about this book after
and
this
even
first
if you,
issue.
If you were wary of it because you were really into the old Young Avengers and you feel like it's going to be different, it's kind of different, but it's still got a lot of the themes and stories from that. And a lot of the characters are still in it. And well, even more of them are showing up later, which is pretty cool. I don't know.
Well, and I'd say, on the other hand, like, if you haven't read the old Young Avengers, I feel like you can just jump right into this and you're fine. Like, there might be a couple things where you're like, well, like,
what are they talking about?
Yeah, like, this person?
But I think that's also stuff that you can get past pretty easily. Yeah, I mean, in the back, Kieran Gillen, the writer, basically says, you know, if Young Avengers was about, like, being 16, this is about being 18. And, like, and how that affects the theme of the book and stuff like that. I thought this was awesome. I thought it was really good, and this was my favorite book of the week.
Definitely mine,
not Jared's.
Nope. Second favorite.
But yeah, that's it for this week. I think we ended on a high note, which is pretty good. There were a couple stinkers in there, but that tends to happen. So we'll be back next time with more Big Planet Comics Podcast.
Later.